You just have to keep going. You have to want it enough to wake up tomorrow and do the same thing over.
This was me being a hustler.
The only way that I've gotten to this point in my life is to try to treat people the way I want to be treated.
Welcome to Ground Zero Growth with your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbaud.
Hello, everybody. My name is Sam Sapp, and I'm joined today with Gentry Ferguson, managing partner of Talent Solutions Partners. How are you doing today, Gentry?
Wonderful, Sam. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad to have you on. You know, you've connected me with some fantastic people through your kind of side organization, Kansas City B2B. So shout out to Kansas City B2B. That's actually where I met Lindsay, and she was on the podcast at one point as well. So that was a fantastic interview.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Great group. And obviously, met you there, Sam. We have a great relationship, so appreciate you having me on today.
I love it. So let's kind of start with what you're doing currently, so to speak. Can you tell me a little bit about Talent Solutions Partners and kind of your role within that institution?
Yeah, absolutely. Outside of networking, where a lot of people meet me, I do co-own a company called Talent Solutions Partners. Essentially, what that means is we're a full-cycle talent management company. And we essentially help companies from hire to fire. And what that means even further is that we help companies hire great talent, train great talent, develop talent, all the way to transitioning talent.
You know, I thought that was that sounded like such a unique thing to me, if I'm being honest. And I thought I was relatively familiar with the recruiting agency, having been in one or two through my course of tech career, where you had mentioned something in particular called outplacement, which I wasn't even remotely familiar with, but I love the notion on. Can you kind of talk on that a little bit?
Yeah, so I'm sure we'll dive into other past, but our company has evolved, and we actually rebranded in July of last year to Talent Solutions Partners. And my partner, John, and I really took a moment to think about how we wanted our organization to be and the steps that we needed to take to grow that. Part of it was really diving into one of our products. You know, when we talk about full cycle, there are many, but we decided to hone in on career transition services. And, you know, honestly, about 50% of companies even know what that is and utilize it. So we have a lot of market to cover, but your big companies know what this is, you know, as part of an individual being laid off from their organization as part of their severance package. There's typically some language in there about receiving these type of services. And how it works, Sam, is that if you or I are let go from an organization that provides this service, you'll get a career coach. Typically, in that case, their programs, they could be 1 month in time, 3 month in time, 6 months in time. And you get a one-to-one coach. And all of our coaches have either an HR background or they've been an executive coach, you know, for a handful of years. And they have a passion for really diving in with an individual, understanding where they're at in their career, and then guiding and educating how they can get them to their next opportunity. And then, of course, we've got technology that backs that up. So we have a portal in which an individual can log into. And these are resources from literally leaving day one from your organization, like, you know, what to do and not to do in terms of going online and talking about said organization in a professional way, to managing finances, to then, of course, resume creation, interview prep, to job offer negotiation. So we've really honed in on career transition services. We see an opportunity in the market because other big players in Kansas City have left because they've been acquired by even larger companies. And so we're really coming in to make sure that we do it right and provide that, you know, personal one-to-one touch with the company and all the other things that they're looking for.
Do you think that service only helps everybody involved? Because I would think, I personally would have viewed highly on institutions that offered a solution to find something else.
You're seeing a huge shift right now, Sam. COVID did a lot of things to a lot of people, right? And I would say that during that time, we saw a lot of individuals impacted. I know professionally I was impacted. I would say one in three people were impacted in terms of job loss, and companies didn't handle it very well. So the notion of outplacement has been around for a long time, right? But people who were let go in the past, typically not every time, was due to job performance. Of course, there's times when a plant closes, right? And a company's got to make that cut financially. So it's almost viewed upon, if you were let go from an organization, that you weren't capable of doing your job in the right way or at the capacity in which they wanted you to. That's not the case. And really, we saw that in COVID, where, let's face it, a lot of that was financial. And so a lot of people who were let go, either the position was completely eliminated, right? Or there was no budget or financial distress for the organization. So people started to go through this process, and it wasn't done very well, because there is the right way to do it, the wrong way to do it. And actually, we educate people when they go to land a job to really read their employment agreement that they're about to sign, because in a lot of situations, all of that is already detailed. So you'll learn a lot about an organization, how they'll treat you in the good times, right, in terms of making money and how you can be successful, but also in the bad times. So when there is a separation, there should be some language in there about your severance, how much they might pay you upon exit, all the way to career transition services, which is obviously something that we provide. So yeah, kind of full circle to your question, though, is there is a lot of opportunity. A company that does it is really, there's many reasons why an organization would choose to add outplacement services as part of a severance package. It's obviously good grace for an employee, but not only the employees that were let go, but the employees that remain. And then, of course, from many legality perspectives, they are, protecting themselves and doing the right thing, right? Because a company that says they're willing to invest in an individual who they've let go to help them go land a job quicker says a lot about them, right? Rather than a lot of your companies that just part ways and don't even wish you luck, right? They just show you the door.
Right. Yeah. So let's kind of talk about that a little bit. Let's rewind the clock. And it's interesting, because normally, so in the initial part of the interview, normally we dive into, and what I like to dive into is, what was kind of your first dream? And maybe this is just me and where I was, but think around the time when you're kind of in high school and you're getting ready to go off to college, and what are you going to go study? Why are you going to go study it? What's Gentry going to be when he grows up?
That's right. So I had a wild ride, Sam. And I don't share this with a lot of people just because it is personal, and everybody has a past. But, during my high school days, I personally, my father was ill. So pretty much from my sophomore year or end of freshman year, all the way through basically what would be my sophomore year of college, my father was ill and then ultimately passed away in 2006. So you can imagine, as someone who's 17, 16, 17, 18, to your young 20s, dealing with that at home is a very tough situation. Luckily for me, I've always been generally motivated. There were times during that process where I wasn't. But I've always been about mentors professionally. And so I had some good other families of friends that were great mentors to me at that time that were helping guide me during those tough times. And at that time, I was waiting tables, my junior and senior year of high school. I was actually working at Jack Stack Barbecue and became one of their sought after waiters, essentially meaning like there were people that were coming to sign in and were requesting my section and were willing to wait another 30, 40, 50 minutes, whatever it was, in order to get my section. And quick, funny side story, one of the bartenders at my networking event, KCB2B, she's like, "You look so familiar." And I'm like, "Maybe so. I do know a lot of people." And she's like, "No, I know how I know you." And she goes, "You were our favorite waiter at Jack Stack Barbecue." And I was like, "You're kidding me. And she, the next time I came back to the venue, Sam, she had a picture of us out in front of the Jack Stack Barbecue bowl that they have off 95th and Metcalf, me and her family. And she's like, "We would literally come in and ask for you." And it was such an awesome experience. So through that, even though I didn't necessarily love waiting tables, but I loved people. I loved the interaction. I was actually really good at it, but I love people and connecting and just hearing stories. And so they had actually asked me to enter their management program. And at that time, I had no idea, Sam, what I wanted to do. Dealing with home life, right, that was tough, and was like, "Man, I just don't know," right? And so this was just as I was exiting high school and trying to, to your point, what do I want to do in college? So I actually just went to JUCO at first and really focused on a hospitality degree as I was going through management training at Jack Stack Barbecue. And it didn't take me long, honestly, Sam, to realize that that wasn't where I belonged, right? That type of industry was not where I belonged. And so shortly after that, I got hired on at Garmin for my first, what I call my big boy career. And then I was able to finish out my college. And, you know, so managing both at the same time was a lot of work. But for me, I was able to jump into a professional setting that I loved. I loved everything about Garmin. So many great mentors, learned a ton, was able to get a new opportunity in terms of growth every other year, it seemed like. And then, you know, in the last 5 years that I was there from 2007 till 2017. So a good 10-year run in the corporate world. In the last 5 years, I was in a role that I absolutely loved. And, but yeah, you know, I mean, going back to those high school to college days, I had no idea, Sam. And really, I kind of just let the world guide me. And that's kind of what even led me to where I was.
Where was your mother in all this?
She was there, you know, I mean, dealing with, you know, life. So I have an older brother and he was off to college and he would always come back and help, obviously. But, you know, for my mom, you know, those times were extremely tough, right? I mean, so my dad had a grade 4 glioblastoma brain tumor, which if anybody is aware how that works, it's a brain tumor that continues to grow. And so he had multiple surgeries and he'd get better and be normal. And then we knew we were always battling something. So it was another major surgery and another major surgery. He was only given 6 months to live. Basically, at the end of my freshman year, he was given 6 months to live, and he lived 7 years. And so he was a miracle. But also at the same time, you got to imagine as a young boy who needs a dad, right? I didn't necessarily have that. Not his fault, not anybody's fault, but I did kind of have to figure the early parts of my life out on my own. I did have families again that were very close to me through all my friends. They were a second, third, fourth family. And so I got that. But I didn't get to live the normal, like, I've got this dad who's here.
Yeah.
He's teaching me how to work on the car. He's guiding me through life or teaching me about finances. I didn't get those experiences. And so I really had to learn on my own and ask a lot of questions. And I did that just through people, right? It was, I have a great bond with, you know, I'd have no problem talking to anybody. And I'm no better than you, Sam, or anybody else. And I try to advocate that in my work that I do today, that we're all people and we're all capable of doing great things. And sometimes some of us just need additional guidance, right? And I needed additional guidance at that time. I was young, had no idea how life worked. And so again, luckily I had that support system.
No, you're 100% right. And it's an interesting thing. I remember a time when, and you and I kind of talked about this in one of my valleys with regards to, basically restarting the business. I distinctly remember almost kind of ping-ponging who I called for emotional support, because I recognized, you know, you can't call the same person day in and day, at least for me, I don't think you can call the same person day in and day out necessarily for emotional support. So I actually kind of two or three people, and I would kind of rotate. And that helped get me through.
Absolutely right.
I'm glad they stuck it in there, because I could imagine a world where it's like, you know, we pick ourselves up by our bootstraps, but there's times when it's particularly difficult.
Yeah, there were definitely times, Sam, that I was very lost, right? I mean, how can you not be, right? And that's really, you know, at that time, I give a lot of props to Jack Stack. And I mean, they're a great organization. I know a ton of people that are still there, leadership. And you know, there was a lot of people who were willing to help me, because it was all happening during that period of time. And when I actually came in to quit, because I was like, I know I can go do something better. You know, that was my mentality. Not that what they do is bad, but it was, you know, I was like, I'm built for something different. This isn't what I'm built for. And they were in full support, and they were really like, how can we help you achieve that, right? And a lot of the guidance that they gave me. And so that was, you know, again, I've just met people along the way that were willing to support, even if I made a bad decision along the way. that may have been an actual bad decision, or ultimately it turns out to be a good decision. But you know what I mean? Like, entering it all pretty blind, there was a lot of people that had my back, and that's how this world works, man. I mean, I've learned firsthand, and a lot of people are learning firsthand. It doesn't matter how great you are, especially if you're looking for a job. If you do not have a connection in some capacity, or, you know, you don't have that relationship built in some way, it doesn't matter how great you are. The likelihood of you landing that role is very slim, right? And so it does. It takes people. It takes a corner. It takes advocacy, all those things. And again, luckily I had that early on.
So to that end, how does a waiter at Jack Stack going to JUCO get on at Garmin? And what role were you at Garmin?
Yeah, great question. I did not have a phenomenal first job, but I would say that I got into an entry-level role. And at that time, I'm trying to think what my actual job title was. I think I was an associate buyer. And so an associate buyer, I was buying materials for the products in which they were building, right? So I was technically supply chain operations, which, you know, for college, that was my focus, business with supply chain minor. And so I was able to do both because they allowed it, right? And so, which was great of Garmin to obviously give me that opportunity. And so that's where I learned, had a great team. I still know all the individuals that were in that group, phenomenal people. And that just, you know, that kind of led it to different opportunities within operations there at Garmin. And then, you know, kind of from then on. But you're right. I mean, as a big organization that's actually known very much for only hiring individuals from top tier colleges and whatnot. Sure, I didn't have a top tier job back when, you know, in 2007 or whatever, when I was 21, but I did get the opportunity, and I knew I was a hard worker. And guess what? I get to sit right in there with HR, because that's kind of where the associate buyers. And so I made friends with all the HR people. Still am great friends with a lot of the HR folks that are still there today. And they gave me opportunities, right? And that's all we ever really need in life is an opportunity to go do something great.
Wow. Yeah. You sound like a fast learner, and you're probably scrappy on the fly.
You have to be. I'm not going to say that I'm perfect in any way, where nobody's perfect, but you do. I mean, in life, when you're doing things on your own for a long time, you kind of have to be scrappy. And that's, I've always been generally scrappy in that sense. But, you know, along the way too, you know, a life learner, I guess, right? A continual learner. And even in my current, I have to learn every day, and we have to learn what's disrupting our industry and our market and the products that we serve. And again, to go be great at something, you got to be great at something, right?
So when's that first dream start to really evolve for you? Where, I mean, you're over at Garmin now, and you're in an associate buyer position. Where along the way, and maybe it's not even at Garmin, that you start to kind of,
yeah,
you know,
was at Garmin, but it would fast forward to, I guess it would have been 2012 when my mentor and advocate, who was a leader within the operations team, who dealt with me asking for a new job after new job, right, in operations. Bless his heart. I won't name his name, but, you know, if he ends up listening, he knows who he is. He's actually still at Garmin. But anyways, he introduced me to a group that was newly formed. They called it engineering business development at the time, but you can think of this as strategic partnerships, strategic technology partnerships. And so I was introduced into that team, and that individual advocated for me very strongly. And so, yes, it was an internal pivot for me. I still obviously had to interview and go through that whole process, but entered this group, and there was only three people at the time. And so again, early 2012, and I fell in love with it, Sam. Like, when you talk about something that you think, you know, all the other things I wasn't extremely passionate about, I was obviously trying to figure out what maybe gave me passion in the work that I was doing. None of the early stuff really did that for me. I liked it, but I didn't love it. And then I run into this strategic partnerships, and something about the way you foster relationship between two companies, whether it's through technology integrations, or it could be a marketing play, or it could be something bigger. There is just a level of like I don't really know how to explain it because we're creating something that doesn't exist, right? So there's that pretty cool factor, but also just the way that we can get these groups together and think strategically and come up with an idea. And of course, then we'd pull in engineering to go build it and whatnot. And we'd advocate and, foster the process along the way. So I did that for about 5 years, Sam. And so when you think about, when you're asking me about like, when did I actually think my career, like where that path was leading, that's essentially where it started because I knew I loved it. And there was something about it that I very much loved and got a lot of passion from, and I was passionate about the work that I did. And life happens, and I get a phone call one day, and it was from another company. Oh, go ahead. Do you want to?
No, and this is a cool pause. So I want, how many roles did you embody? Because it sounds like, you're a waiter, and I think you semi-discovered it then, but didn't realize where you're passionate about relationships. And it sounds like this is like the first real discovery that is going to be a pivotal point of what you want to do. How many roles, though, before you discover the thing?
Yeah, it wasn't too many. I want to say I had 3 roles at Garmin.
Okay.
Before engineering business development. But I say that's over 5 years, right? So, you average a year and a half, and I was eager for something new or to try something new or learn something new within the operations team. And that was great because I was given those opportunities. But
right.
Again, people, as they kind of think about their career and try to figure out what it is that they want to do, they think that the first thing that they do is it, Again, even in the latter, like, we're going to get to this, right? Because we still have a lot of life to live, Sam, but I don't know what the future holds, right? But I can tell you, right. I definitely have learned over the years what a passion of mine is. But yeah, so I would say that's kind of where, sure, I learned that relationships and people were a passion early. Didn't find it in the work that I did. That's fine. Got into a great company that just allowed me to learn, because I would say those early years at Garmin was all learning, right? I had to learn professionally and all the things that you need to have that business acumen and whatever else. But I still was searching for something that gave me the other joys in life, right? Professionally, right? And then I land into a role that gives me a hint of that, right? Because I still wasn't completely satisfied. And my old boss would know, like, over the time, I'm like, I need more. I want, whatever, like as a professional. And I get a random phone call, Sam, and that's kind of what led to my next opportunity. So there was a brand new role created at AMC Theaters, which is also corporate headquarters here in Kansas City, the largest theater operator in the world. And there was a lot of my mentors that actually urged me not to do that, which was a little shocking, but also I was listening. And then there was others that said, Gentry, you got to do this, because the opportunity was the opportunity that I was looking for at Garmin. That, again, it's hard because companies can't just create these opportunities. Essentially, I would have wanted my old boss's job, that, right, they're still there.
Right.
Then I was presented that opportunity at AMC and did a lot of due diligence, and there was a lot of things that was happening within. So this was in 17 then, Sam. So early 17, AMC got a brand new CEO. They were a new Chinese conglomerate was backing them financially. They just bought some theater chains that then made them the largest theater chain in the world, which those are all very positive things, right? But a lot of people were like,
I remember that too, because up to that point, I think AMC was largely American. And so that was, there was concerns at that point of foreign entities controlling an element of, at least this is what I was reading, of controlling an element of media. Like, this might be their opportunity to kind of control Hollywood a little bit, so to speak.
Sure. Yeah,
but anyway, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah. So that's why I remember it, I guess, is the point.
That's right. Yeah, so big time for AMC, right? I mean, those days, their stock was at an all-time high. They were on a hiring spree. They have a beautiful office in Leawood that they were expanding. I mean, if you really look through all the things... Yeah. There was a lot of reasons why I would join, especially right in the curtails of an exciting time. And my role was brand new. So there are pros and cons to a role being brand new in any organization, especially an organization that's been around a long time. But the sentiment at that time was, there's so many people reaching out, so many companies that are reaching out for partnership, and we don't know where it, who this belongs to, right? Which is why newly formed role in terms of leadership of strategic partnerships for AMC. Hence, here comes Gentry into AMC and basically the first part of 2017.
So prior to that point, they were theoretically just kind of matching potential partnerships with the department, for example.
You know, I'm not exactly sure how much partnership. I mean, there are always partnerships that exist.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
I know they had partnerships with, you know, big companies like Fandango who do third-party ticketing. So some of those things exist. But you know what? As more and more of those happen, that becomes a lot of work. And those contracts are long. They take forever to negotiate. There's a financial component. And then there's a management component from not only internal project or program management teams, but now you've got, you know, the other company in which, you know, if you're, whatever it is that you're exchanging, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It depends on the integration, but there's a lot that goes into it. And that's really where I got a lot of respect for this line of work, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think even a small business can respect the notion of, you know, eventually you end up with so many partnerships, you're kind of like, wait, what is this bill I'm paying? Where did it come from?
That's absolutely. And you need a whole team.
For how long?
You need a whole team that's in, it's, you know, managing the royalties or whatever has been negotiated. Now there's a whole group that is literally managing the contract on your behalf to make sure that the financials are aligning for whatever was agreed upon.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, that's exciting. So tell me about that. And how much of that is that at that size and scale, is that still a lot of relationship or is it a lot of paperwork? Can't think of a better way to say it.
So some interest, you know, again, for a role that's brand new into a large organization, I'm not sure how ready they were for this type of role. You can say you're ready, but when an actual new integration comes in and you're like, oh man, you're taking resources from our IT team or finance has no idea what you're doing. We've got to create new codes or I would say the progression was slower than I would have liked initially. And there were, you know, there were, just like anything else. Look, AMC is not a technology company. They are, you know, they are in an entertainment company, but they were definitely trying at that time to be a technology company. It's hard to do, right? It's very hard.
Well, that's a large organization. So what I'm kind of hearing is through no fault of anybody, you almost end up becoming the worst nightmare for each department head, basically.
There probably were times that there's not a lot of people that love the work that Gentry was doing. And what I would say to that is at that time, you know, I was tasked with getting AMC tickets everywhere, Sam. So it was, you know, we had to understand budgets and capacity and learn that early on, right? So those are some of the pain points of entering any new organization. But then it was like, hey, how can Gentry go be effective in the organization in partnership with IT? So I had a great relationship with the IT team to say, what can we do that exists today that we can go and make AMC more money? And at that time, look, AMC has an API and There are third parties that have a relationship with AMC that can utilize that, get real-time ticketing information, right? For, you know, in terms of being able to get your ticket anywhere. And then we really kind of went on a roadshow and, you know, the Googles of the world, and we were exploring. There's still some articles that exist out there. We were in early conversations with Facebook as they were going to invest very heavily into what would have been like a movies widget at the bottom of their app to where they were going to go after studios. And you'd see ads for new movies on that. And of course, guess what? You could go seamlessly buy a ticket to that said show at an AMC, of course, because we have that integration already integrated. So being the largest was a great problem because everybody, guess what? Goes to the largest person first, right? Because for smaller companies, there's a greater revenue opportunity for them. And then for me, it's almost at the forefront of this new technology, which I love technology. So you get all these big players, small players, mid-sized players are like, man, we should do something cool. And it is hard to then, you know, not go down a rabbit hole 10 different directions, right, on cool innovations.
I remember, I think maybe even right around then, I don't know, maybe you were involved with this too. I always assumed it was more Google's side. There was a couple times where we got a movie ticket And then all of a sudden, my phone, which was an Android at the time, is notifying me, hey, if you want to catch your movie, you might leave in the next hour. And I'm sitting here like, and I'm super privacy and security conscientious as always. And I'm like, how the heck does my phone know I have a movie? And the only thing that I figured was it was like, oh, wait, I used my Gmail to register for the ticket. And the ticket, I got a copy of my Gmail. And so my Gmail is feeding the information and reminding me that I
would say
to get to my
I would say and give props to AMC because let's face it, they sell movie tickets, right? And popcorn.
Yeah.
But they have to do it really, really well. Right. And they do. There's a lot of things, and there's dedicated teams and personnel that are attached solely to like, oh, if Sam gets into a certain radius of the theater, right, it's going to ping them like, hey, pre-order your snacks or things like that, right? So there is technology embedded into all of that for them to say, hey, and that was at theater type of technology, right? But so that was props to the, or kudos to the IT teams and some different integrations there. But that was a lot of like, hey, Sam's close, and it's probably because you were using the app and the app's got this correlation, right? And so there are a lot of things that they do that they do really, really well. And at the time, you know, when we think about all these strategic partnerships, there was a lot of excitement, right? Because let's face it, we saw some of the biggest box offices happen in 17, 18, and even 19. There were some extremely large films that were coming out. And again, from an AMC perspective, the biggest thing a lot of my mentors told me was like, don't go work for a company that doesn't own its own product. And I thought, and that was an interesting comment, Sam, because I was like, man, that's interesting. I hadn't even really thought of that. I mean, AMC owns the buildings, but the content that's played in the buildings is not theirs. It's somebody else's, right? And so how do you control when there's a strike, right, that we've seen, or there isn't good content that's produced, or content's disrupted like we're kind of seeing, right? But I think, there's an evolution in the way we watch things. AMC's a big company. They got it figured out. They have a lot of great people. They got a lot of great talent that still works there. But look, that's a tough industry. Very tough industry.
Right, right. Well, especially, yeah. No, you're exactly right. I mean, especially now. I mean, we were seeing a stint there. I mean, obviously streaming platforms existed before then. But then there was kind of a stint there where it was like, you know, streaming platforms just they don't have these movies. They've got those movies and those shows, which are good, you know, but they don't have these movies and shows. And so we were kind of starting to see a resurgence right around that time, too, where it was like, you know, theater's great. It's not going anywhere.
It's an entertainment venue, right? Like they know by numbers how many times Sam and Gentry are going to the movies. It may only be one, two or three times a year. But guess what? There's a lot of people and they have a lot of locations. And it is driven by the content. So if there's a film that, you know, you get excited about, Sam's going. You know, Sam's going to talk about how Sam's going. Look, Netflix coexisted with AMC. And that, there was always this conversation, Netflix taking down AMC. But like when I was there, we never really talked about that internally. We didn't worry about Netflix. They were doing their own thing. They still are doing their own thing. Sure, they're creating content. They're trying to bring it to the theaters and whatnot. But like it will coexist. It may not look the same, but it will coexist in some capacity, right? I can't predict the future for them and what the next 10 years look like. But look, they're innovators. There's great business leaders over there that's going to figure that out. It's going to evolve. But, you know, what does it actually look like in 10 years? No idea.
Right. So tell me about that journey. And through AMC and out of AMC, because it does sound like there were, well, I'm kind of curious, was the role kind of everything you wanted it to be, but, or it does kind of sound like the role had more difficulties than maybe, I mean, obviously a different role, but it does sound like it had more difficulties with regards to the relational aspect than Garmin.
I loved my time at AMC. Great challenges. I learned a lot. I was challenged professionally. Right. I had a bigger role. I had a bigger say at the table. You know, all those things come with more headaches and more stress and all the things. So I think at that time in my career, Sam, leaving what was comfortable to me at Garmin and kind of my entry into the business world and all of the things, which I still very highly speak of that organization, allowed me that transition to AMC, no matter the outcome, was very pivotal in a very positive way for me. Look, there were good days and bad days, but you know what? Welcome to having a job in corporate world. There's always going to be good and bad days. But I traveled a ton. I learned a lot, made some really great connections, both internally and externally. And sure, I would say that it didn't go, like the story didn't end the way I thought it would, Sam, because ultimately, as we kind of fast forward, Avatar 2, which was slated for 2020, was moved out of 2020, which in that world, in the AMC world, and this is really a glimpse of like the control and the, I guess what they don't have control of is when those movies are moved and another movie does not move in its place, there are challenges financially for them in that said year. So pre-COVID, we're literally talking pre-COVID, right?
Interesting.
The end of 19, we are aware that Avatar 2, which you know it was even delayed even further, was moved out of 2020, multi-billion dollar movie that would drive tons of revenue for every theater chain, was now no longer in 2020. And so AMC had to make that tough decision, you know, operational cuts as well as personnel cuts. I was part of a small riff, but I believe there was 50 people impacted at the end of 19. My group was the very, the newest group in terms of, entry into AMC. And so there's, you know, by kind of capacity of that. So, my role was eliminated. And I would say, you know, during that time, Sam, I generally knew it was coming, but I didn't necessarily know it was coming to me specifically. Right. Mm-hmm. And that could just be ignorance and whatever else. And not having gone through that ever professionally.
To maintain a degree of optimism, right? It's not like you can go into work and do a great job and simultaneously think, right?
That's,
I mean,
right.
I'm trying to think exactly how to describe
it.
Too,
you're not,
even.
You're not wrong, because I would say that operational cuts were happening. We knew that because as leaders of the organization, you know, we're cutting certain expenses and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't have been a surprise, although a little naive or a little like, hey, I'm going to look past this, is that, you know, how do we recover and how do we do great things post these challenging times, right? And look, for me, that just wasn't in the cards, and that's completely okay. But again, Sam, things happen for a reason, right? So I'm now let go at the end of 19. At the end of 19, the world was still perfectly normal, right? Generally speaking, those times were generally normal to all of us, right? Because just around the corner, in February of 2020, everybody's life changed in some capacity, right? So
you,
I was almost
at the end of 19.
Yeah.
Did they, because things were, I thought things were pretty good there all the way. There were whispers of this thing right around the end of 19, because I had started tracking it, I think, in like September, yeah, something like that. Don't get me wrong, we didn't shut down till like March 2020, but there was these weird, like, what?
Yeah.
So I guess I'm more kind of curious, because I had overlapped it with Avatar in my head in 2020, but it sounds like they're preemptively even kind of maybe a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I think when outside of what they knew on COVID or anybody knew about COVID, in a business, it's also, it owns a lot of property, right? In terms of the buildings, a very, you know, operational heavy type of organization. I think, again, with the shift of the movie, I mean, that was a lot of the notion at that time was, hey, this movie's moving. We need to be able to hit target. And a lot of the operational cuts that happened were needed, as well as personnel cuts were needed, right? So, regardless, those happen. I'm a part of that for the first time. And luckily for me, I needed a break, honestly, a lot of travel, a lot of hours work. So for me, it was actually kind of a good, like, I needed a little bit of a mental pause. And when I say a little bit, I'm talking
about... And you've got a family at this point, right? I know we kind of... I'm trying to pull in the atmosphere.
A lot of people don't know, but I do have four kids that span from 15 now, which is crazy, to 8. And my middle two are twins, and they're 10. So So yeah, at this time, you know, my oldest is, you know, 9, 10, and then my twins are 5, and then a 3-year-old, right? So yes, it's a lot. There's a lot going on.
Travel's difficult there.
It was. Look, you know, professionally speaking, you know, a lot of the travel was self-inflicted, but it needed to happen. You know what I mean? Like, I needed to travel to these partners to really create a relationship and a long-term success that needed to happen. And so, yes, I did travel a lot. But so this cut comes, Sam. And honestly, for me, it was a time to be able to spend time with some family. And my wife is, she was working at Children's Mercy very part-time as a PICU nurse. But she never really got to work because, again, I'm, you know, pretty hands in, right? And the day that I called her, I actually called her at 8 a.m. I was an early let go on that day, and I called her, and she's like, "Why are you calling me? You never call me during the day." Well, I was like, "Well, you know, no need to worry, but my role was eliminated, and I'm headed to the gym, and it's all good, and we'll catch up when I get home." And she's like, "Do you care if I pick up this afternoon?" I'm like, "Pick up what?" And she's like, "A shift." I was like, "Oh, at the hospital?" I was like, "Sure, go ahead." And so that allowed her, Sam, and her professional career some opportunity to go work while I was a stay-at-home dad for a little while I decided what my next career path was.
Yeah. Tell me about that break. And I'm more curious, I guess, from the perspective of, well, I suppose similar sort of things. I had about a 3-month break in there, and it was a similar sort of, I didn't expect things to go the way they did. And I don't know, for me, this is only 3 months, but for me, that first month, was maybe kind of relaxing. And then the second month, and then the third month was like too long. Way too long. I should have gotten at it sooner. And it was just downright, oh, what's the term I want to use? I mean, it kind of took my wife to be like, "You gonna go back to it, or right. Are you just gonna slouch around?" I was like, "Oh, you know what? I'm gonna go back to it. Thank you, honey."
Yeah, I when I say I took some time, I took some time to be present. It was interesting, Sam, because it all happened very quickly, and I don't know that there was an ultimate game plan necessarily. Yeah. I mean, every company has to manage layoffs in a particular way. But there were partnerships that were in process. There were integrations that were in process that I cared very deeply about, like too much. And so I had to make contact to these individuals to tell them that they shouldn't be calling me regarding this anymore because I was no longer employed by AMC, right? And so I had to, because I spent so much time personally and professionally with these folks, I owed it to them. And so then guess what happened, Sam? A lot of these people, there was opportunity, you know, in terms of consulting, which I didn't even know really how consulting worked. You know what I mean? Again, being in the corporate landscape, they're like, "Hey, would you help us on this project for 3 months?" And I'm like, "I mean, sure, but like, how does this work?" You know? And so I kind of went to work right away, Sam, to figure out, how I could go do some consulting for these other companies. And that's where, you know, I started my own LLC that was just a way for me to really ultimately at the end of the day be a 1099 employee, right? To be able to be paid by these individuals. But I did a ton of research, you know, it's like a whole new world out there that I had no idea existed. And so I'm, you know, I'm going out to coffees with people to like understand how it works and how did so-and-so get into realty or whatever it was, right? And so then all of a sudden I found myself, Sam. So I was let go in September of 19, and it was pretty much October 1, my LLC was launched, and I was essentially doing partnership work or some, you know, advising for a couple big brands in the theater space, in the movie space specifically, but not necessarily geared towards theaters directly, but allowed me to be active. While I was searching, because I was actively searching for a role in Kansas City or, you know, remote, which really wasn't even a thing at that point in time just yet. But it allowed me that flexibility. And so that's kind of where that next progression in my career started to happen is because I got these small bursts of like, oh, this is kind of cool. And now I'm able to manage my own calendar. And if, you know, I get what I put into it, that sort of thing. That was kind of the entry into that while I was searching for a full-time role.
So I'm trying to track timeline. Is this all happening so fast that we're still in December, January of 2020?
Absolutely.
Because I'm curious 19. To see.
We're not even in 2020 19. Yet. Yeah.
Right. We're in December of 19,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So, because I'm curious to see. So for me, it sounds like you're looking at a relatively soft landing and that these firms are pretty quickly like, hey, we've got this project over here. Can you come on for 3 or 4 months, you know? And now, and you're doing your research, you're getting your LLC, you're a 1099, you're a consultant. Gentry's a consultant, yeah, fast.
That's right.
You know, there's no runway here. He's immediately achieved lift. But then March.
That's right. Well, and I'll even back up because there's a lot that even happened in between that, Sam, because through my job search, I was interviewing at a company out in Olathe, and I was a final runner for that, but it did not feel right. There was something about it that I didn't love. And the recruiter, so this is where I met recruiters. All these recruiters started reaching out. I had no idea that these people existed. And also, just to even back up a little bit, when I was let go from AMC, I was given career transition services. So that's where I learned about that process. I had a great coach.
Oh.
Okay, so I know we kind of skipped over that, but I learned about career transition services. I met recruiters. They were advocating for me in companies. I turned down a company and I greatly apologized to the recruiter because I was like, I know you've taught me how this works. I'm sorry that you won't make money off of me, but I can't accept this role. And they were like, well, let me introduce you to this other guy. And I was like, sure. And so I met this guy named John Doherty, and he was a connection of mine through this recruiter. He met me for coffee. I actually really had no idea that he was residing in Iowa, but we met and I thought he was going to help me find a job, Sam. And lo and behold, he actually offered me a job. And how that actually worked was he owned a company in Kansas City for a very long time. His LLC is Career Management Associates, which ultimately him and I partnered together and started CMA Midwest, which you know is my last company. And so that there was a lot that was happening in a 3 or 4 month span, Sam. And so I partnered with this John Doherty. He talked me into getting into the talent management space, which I was like, why would you ever want me? I don't know anything about this space. And John, and I have a lot of respect for John. John was like, you may not know, I'll teach it to you, but you know everything else I need you to know. Right. And so like other people were advocating, you know, about me to him. He's like, I need this guy to help me build Kansas City. And here we go. Now, all of a sudden, we are business planning and we essentially relaunch because he had a similar company that he sold off in 2015. So John had signed a 5-year non-compete, which is why he moved to Iowa. And then the non-compete ended at the end of 19. There's a lot in there, Sam, that I won't, you know, get all into. But essentially, we relaunched his LLC, but renamed the company CMA Midwest. And so I helped with the website launch and branding. And essentially at that time, Sam, this was in February of 2020 now. So we didn't go a lot of months here in our timeline conversation, but we're now February of 2020 and we launch as an executive search firm. Executive search firm being, we are going to help companies find senior level talent. And that's, so now we're in February.
Expensive talent.
Yes.
Yeah, senior level talent, expensive talent.
And so here we are. Here we are.
Right.
Here we are, Sam. Yeah. These are, we get our first opportunity. John and I are moving quickly already. And then guess what happens? The world, you know, my kids are being sent home. I'm like, why are my kids at home? And why is everybody home from their work? And why are we now not even allowed to go outside? My gym is closed. So the world was literally collapsing before my eyes, right? And I was like, and we just launched this business that is helping people find opportunities. And there were no opportunities, right, Sam? There was none. Like, let's face it. Everybody was being, we're now in like April and everybody's being let go.
Yeah.
Right? Businesses have shut down. People are being let go. No one can go outside. No one can do anything.
And there wasn't at any level, like, I mean, I said expensive talent because I was thinking that might change something. But the truth of the matter is nobody's quitting. No, nope. There's nobody's at a senior level that's quitting, right? No.
Everybody stayed put.
Right.
If they weren't being terminated, they were not going anywhere. Why would they? There was literally nowhere for them to go, right?
Right.
So we had, this is where I laugh internally because I was like, hey, I tried. You know what I mean? I've never been in this world. I gave it a go. If it doesn't work, I'm just going to go back to corporate world, right? But I was like, you know what? No, like, let's figure this out. There's obviously an opportunity. And Sam, that's when, through the guidance and partnership of John, we got into career transition services. So we did that pretty much at the end of April of 2020. So that was my entry into competing against the big companies, you know, in terms of like providing that type of service. And that's how we survived 2020. You know, we got into career transition services. We got referrals. We were transitioning a couple hundred people. We survived, right? And it was like, wow, we at least got out of this muckiness and all the crazy things. And then, you know, the ride didn't end, obviously, because, the next couple of years after that, Sam, government infused a bunch of cash into organizations, right, for COVID relief. And then what did they do? They hired like crazy. Okay? And so companies are infused with a ton of cash. And then guess what? Housing market went through the roof. There's a big correlation between the job market and the housing market. Housing prices go through the roof. Job salaries and opportunities are going through the roof. Companies, I mean, you remember these stories about Facebook paying ridiculous amounts of money to get these engineers and hired 10,000 people. It was insane, right? So 21 and 22 are this hiring mecca that we probably haven't seen in maybe ever. And it's like all these people are being hired. And now you and I, as individuals, have leverage.
There was a lot of acquisition then, too. I remember 22 in particular. There was a lot of buying.
Tons. Yeah. And then, Sam, like, then what did we see at the end of 2022? There was now you start to see, and tech companies are typically the ones that lead the trend. Facebook laid off 10,000. Google laid off 10,000. Amazon laid off 10,000. These big, massive, Peloton was laying off thousands of people. Like, all these big companies were laying off, even if it was only 10% of their workforce, these are massive numbers, right? Massive numbers. And 23 was a really interesting year professionally, Sam. I'd say a very pivotal year for me as I never saw a normal year since we launched CMA Midwest, right? So career transition, and then we got into search 21 and 22 and did a lot of placements in those couple of years. And then 23 was like the dust was settling. And then it was like, man, what are we doing? What is our company? What are we trying to achieve? It's been crazy. And so that was a year in which we onboarded another partner. And then it was just kind of like, what is the evolution of our organization? And that's when it was new John and I. So my new business partner, John Copeland, and I, we came up with this plan. And it was like, we need to reposition the organization and we need to invest in it. And so John Doherty ended up basically retiring in a way. So he's a board member. And we use that opportunity to basically just rebrand CMA Midwest to Talent Solutions Partners, which is our current company. Now, John Copeland and I are business partners on paper as managing partners of the organization. And again, that's kind of where we led into our focus and, you know, how we're going to approach the market is very driven towards career transition for now. It's not that that's what only will be the only product that we have in our organization, but that's, we have to do something really well. And honestly, Sam, I see a lot of opportunity with this, a lot because a big competitor left Kansas City through acquisition. But let's face it, technology is disrupting everything right now. AI is disrupting our day-to-day lives, but it's also impacting companies. And so you're going to see companies reduce staff, not only just because they overhired in 21 and 22, because we're seeing that. There's a lot of like talent reviews happening within organizations, and they're saying, hey, we overhired, or we hired the wrong people, right? So now you're seeing layoffs that are strategic. And then, of course, technology is disrupting these companies, and they're now reducing headcount. And that will only continue to increase. There are reports that by 2027, which is scary because that's only a couple of years away, that, you know, over 41% of companies will make reductions in their employment numbers, specifically because of AI disruption. And so that's, you know, it's concerning, because not that jobs, you know, there's an evolution of jobs, right? We thought the web was going to take over.
Right.
There's going to be a new creation of jobs, but we just don't know what that looks like right now. You know?
No, so it's 100%. It is. It's absolutely fascinating to me. And we could go into a tangent of AI if you wanted to, but it's interesting to me because, you know, for technically what we have now is language learning model, LLM. And I had a friend of mine, and he, you know, we were having a fun doomsday conversation, and I was leaning a little bit more on the, I mean, it could happen. And he was on the side of, no, it never happened. And his point was, he's like, this thing is just spitting out English like what you want. And my point was, I'm like, yeah, but it's so readily available. There's nothing stopping people from putting arms and legs and hands and feet on this thing. And, you know, I mean, that's what we're seeing at the end of the day. The rapid development over the last year and a half has literally just been, okay, let's plug everything into these models. We have the models now. They're pretty well trained rather rapidly, and they're rather intelligent. What can we connect to them, and what will that power? And it's really easy now, more than ever, for anybody to go out and plug in and empower whatever it is they're doing with just a little bit of AI.
Absolutely right.
Anyway, that'll be an interesting transition, I would say, to say the least. It's intriguing now, too, from a recruitment perspective, because with the way AI is getting, a lot of what we're seeing right now, in my opinion, is just an increase in spam text, spam emails, and spam messages, right? Because now we can just automate and you know, you can have a whole conversation with somebody before you realize it's not a person on the other line.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, every industry is being impacted, right? So from a recruitment standpoint, you know, for us, in our model, we're still very high level, what we're focused on in terms of definitely more senior. And these are definitely more passive level searches. So these are strategic hires of individuals that are either in an industry or in a role that the company is looking for. And we're actually poaching people from companies, right? So that's still very personal. But I do know, you know, I sit on the board for, it's called the MKSSA, Missouri Kansas Search and Staffing Association. This association is geared towards educating and gathering amongst all the search and staffing companies from Western Kansas to Eastern St. Louis. And there's a lot of learnings, you know, so we hold conferences, we learn about tech disrupting staffing, learning about how staffing companies are being nimble, how they're finding people. And yes, there's an influx of technology, just like every industry, but there's an influx of technology in recruiting that's making their lives, because they do large volume, but making their lives seamless, right? They're no longer just going to LinkedIn Recruiter and finding people. They're able to find people pretty much everywhere and reach them seamlessly through a bunch of automation, right? And they can do that in masses. And so now they're able to move quicker, and the recruiters are now more capable of doing more work given said technology.
Well, and the interesting thing about the senior level that I think would be very appropriate for you is it's got to be a lot more relational too.
Very, very. Yep, it's very relational, and that's very much like career transition, right? I mean, we talk about automation there. We have a whole portal that does have AI integration into it, and we've talked about, you know, chat bots and that whole digital side. But the most value that you get out of a career transition program is the one-to-one coaching. You know, it's these types of conversations with a real person where you have a connection, you know, you're talking about your strategy or maybe problems that you're having and looking for that expertise. Now, we're going to have to be nimble in the market as that changes, but that is our, you know, complete focus at technology and one-to-one coaching, they have to coexist. And that's where our value continues to lie. And we see it from people all day long, right? The technology's there, great. They can use it. But what they value the most is the one-to-one coaching. It's invaluable right now. So
fantastic. So I've got a couple questions here towards the end as we start to wrap up. But first, I should ask if there's anything we kind of missed. I mean, obviously, we can't capture the whole of it
in
an hour.
We could go on forever, Sam. But I would say the only thing we didn't really discuss is, in 2020, just past the uplift of us being trapped in our homes or not being able to go outside, is my connection into my partner, Susan. And that's kind of the formation of our networking group. So Susan and I were doing business development. We met and it was really like, man, how do we get people to just feel comfortable again getting out, right? And it was almost like we had to retrain people how to be people again and how to actually like create a relationship. And that was really, that's the story we tell because one, it's true, but that's absolutely how it started for us to then have these small gatherings. I would do business development with people. She was doing business development with people. We'd bring those people together, have a little networking event. And then we say, hey, if we do this again, would you bring somebody? And then like, yeah, so then they bring somebody, right? And we did that on a small scale. So, I mean, you were an early adopter to Kansas City B2B. But, we'd have 20 people in a room, but it was very deep relationship building. And I honestly love that. It's very hard to do in the capacity that we're at today. And I'll talk about that in a second. But it's like, that is so great because you really get to know. I mean, I am truly about understanding who somebody is and what they're doing and how I can help them. I would say that even most people in Kansas City B2B probably have no idea what I actually do during the day because I don't actually talk about it a ton because I don't need to. I'm not selling to them. And I actually recommend a lot of people don't come to the networking group to go sell. Come build a relationship and sell through people's network. Right? Go actually like legitimately create a relationship. And you'll be surprised, and I've learned this, not only just from prior years, but more specifically in the early years of us launching CMA Midwest, it was very much like I wasn't going to go make a cold call. I was going to build a real relationship and sell through that. Sure, it's a longer lead cycle, depending on your industry, but it's authentic. And especially in the work that we do, it's very relationship driven. In the talent management world, it's very relationship driven and trust. And so we have to have that. And so we wanted to build a community of business professionals where that was the idea and essentially backing of what we wanted Kansas City B2B to be. And then, through the year, Sam, and you've known 2024 was a huge year for that group. Saw record numbers. We average around 100 people at each event. We have an event coming up next week. Tomorrow. The days are getting away from me, but tomorrow, 122, and there's 180 people registered, and so we should see north of 100 people, and these are all walks of life, in their professional career, but they're people who get it, people that want to make a change. So I do that in my spare time as well, Sam. I am a people connector. I enjoy every minute of it, and it obviously helps fuel and my core business, which is. If I've got people in transition, well, guess what? Now I know all these other people or businesses or connections can help them start that conversation and ultimately go land a job much quicker.
And I love that about Kansas City B2B. You really never do know who you're going to run into. And I mean that in the best sort of a way. That's part of the excitement. You really don't know who you're talking to until you take the time to know who it is you're talking to.
That's right. Yeah, it's been interesting, Sam, because we have, half the room is new every month. So, we hold these meetings monthly. Half the room every time has been brand new, which is crazy because we've been doing this now for almost 4 years. This year will be our fourth year. And we have, a Rolodex of over 1,000 people that have attended at any given point. So to say that the room is still half new every time is insane because it's, I'm getting all these random people that are signing up. And I'm like, hey, reaching out. Hey, how did you hear about us? I just saw it. I saw a post through LinkedIn and thought the group looked great, or my friend liked it or commented about it. So now there's just all this like chatter, and we're finding ourselves as we're reviewing the analytics, we're starting to creep up against some of the chambers in terms of numbers, and engagement is higher than theirs, and all the things, which is just fun to see, because this is really just a passion for Susan and I in terms of getting people connected. And that's all we're trying to achieve here is really a safe space for business professionals to go meet and create authentic relationships.
I like it. Yeah. Kansas City B2B. KansasCityB2B.com.
That's right.
Okay, so the two questions. So we have a saying here at LockBod, and that is, if we have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants, like Gentry. Gentry, who's been a giant in your life that has empowered you to see further? You mentioned a few mentors.
Yeah, there are several. But honestly, I would say that outside of everybody professionally, you know, my father-in-law, who's been, so my wife's dad, obviously, he's been a second dad to me. But more importantly, professionally, he's had a very successful career. And he's really who I've leaned on in terms of these types of conversations, right? The conversations I haven't been able to have, you know, with my own father. But it's, I've learned so much in terms of risk. You know, we talk about business all the time. He's always asking me, you know, how's business going? You know, what are challenges you're faced with? What are some things that you have? You know, so he's always questioning our capacity and eagerness and all the things. And I think, and you know this as a business owner, Sam, it's like, if we don't go do the things that we need to do, it's not getting done, right?
Yeah.
We have to be self-motivated to go and go achieve what we want to achieve. And some days that's really hard, right? Some days motivation levels are not where they need to be. And sometimes that's all it takes is a phone call. Hey, struggling today, you know, we've got these couple of things. And he's more than open to just chat about those and be available. And that's the best mentor. And of course, you know, personally, a type of connection that you would ever want. I do have many professionally that it wouldn't do justice to name one of those, because then I'd have to name the others. But they're all fantastic. They all played a key role in my professional career. But my father-in-law, definitely, he's been wonderful and enjoy, obviously, just personal conversation. But definitely love talking professional business shop with him. And he's had a very successful career and can talk about those things and the challenges that companies face and things that he saw and all of that. And we all need that in life, right?
That's cool. So the other question is, what's kind of a rule of thumb that you found to be true again and again and again?
Yeah. So, I mean, this all goes back to, you know, making connections, right? Treat people how you want to be treated. I'm no better than you. You're no better than me. There are definitely people out there that think that they are, you know, and I think I'm willing to help anybody as much as I can. You know, I mean, we all have time limits and whatnot. But it doesn't take much for us as professionals. And I think because I've been through a lot in my own life and haven't been handed things and haven't had to really work for those, perspective is a little bit different. So I do, you know, treat nobody different than the next best person. I meet CEOs all the time. I meet high-level business leaders all the time. But I also meet, you know, the people that come and do home services for me, or, you know, people at the stores that are doing great work. It doesn't take much for me to be extremely nice to them and bring a smile to their face, right? And they're like, oh, you're such a nice person. It's like, I wish more people would just be nice, right? I mean, it doesn't take a lot. But yeah, treat others how you want to be treated. It's a big rule of thumb in just my day-to-day life, but also professionally.
I love it, Gentry. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciated the conversation.
It's been great, Sam. We could go for another hour, but I understand you got to keep these things, you know, on schedule. So I have appreciated. Thanks for having me, Sam.
Thank you, everybody.
Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.